Welcome back. This is Dr. Liz Mosley, and I'm here with Mr. Matt Tolbert, and we are talking about psychodynamic theories today. So, Matt, tell us, how does psychodynamic theories explain personality?
Right. Well, personality, as we've already learned, is characteristic patterns of thinking, feeling, and acting. And in psychodynamics, the focus on the way that we think, the way that we feel, and the way that we act is based upon unconscious motives. Now, this was started by the famous person, Sigmund Freud.
Ah, yes.
That guy, he had psychoanalytic theory, analyzing the different structures of our personality. Mm-hmm. And he said that the largest part of the mind is unconscious, and this motivates the way that we think, the way that we feel, and the way that we act. Now, he did say that the mind is divided up into three components. There was the id, which was our basic motivation. It contained the libido, which is our motivating factor in our life. Mm-hmm. And the id is based upon the pleasure principle, meaning that it is self-serving, impulsive, irrational. It contains our innate biological instincts for food, for sex, for
sleep,
for protection and security, so we fight people off. And that's where that comes from. The ego is the second component of the mind, and it's described as the executive. It is primarily conscious, so we have control over our ego, and it attempts to provide the meaningful decision-making that happens in our conscious lives. And then there is the superego, which is primarily unconscious, and it fights with the id. It contains all of the ideals that society has for us. Hmm. And it tends to be in conflict with the id. So the superego contains all of the learning that we do on what is right and what is wrong, morality, the different expectations of the laws of society. And that inhibits what the id wants to do. It wants mm-hmm. to feel all this pleasure. Mm-hmm. And so there's that conflict there. And so the ego comes in, and the ego makes sure that that we're able to feel appropriate amount of pleasure, but we're also able to, you know, manage the rules that the superego has. The ego kind of acts as that manager between the two.
It's kind of like the little angel and the little devil on your shoulder. It's
absolutely.
Kinda, and then the brain is trying to decide which one to go with.
And that's really where that analogy came from. That illustration of the angel and the devil mm-hmm. came from this concept of Freud's id and the superego. The id is the devil who wants you to just do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. The superego is the little angel saying, no, we've got to make sure and follow the rules. And the ego is represented by that head in the middle
yeah.
who has to, okay, look at both sides yeah. and then I'm going to decide what I'm going to do. And the thing is he didn't necessarily say that one is good and one is bad. Mm-hmm. He just said that this is the process that the mind uses to influence the way that we think, the way that we feel, the way that we act.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when I hear Freud, let me rephrase that. When a lot of people hear the name Freud, they think sex. and so I'm curious if you could you kind of outline the psychosexual stages of development for us?
Right. Well, yeah, sex it was a big topic of his conversation. and his theory was very much based upon these oppressed sexual urges. Sex being the ultimate pleasure in life, according to Freud, was what the id is focused upon and is attempting to feel that kind of pleasure. Well, when the superego limits what the id can do, limits the kind of sex that the id can experience, then this causes anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of his focus was on trying to rectify these urges with what society, was asking of us. So what he came up with were stages of personality development. And he called them the psychosexual stages because he said that in each stage in life, the libido, which is the sex drive, is focused upon different parts of the body or different actions or biological functions of the body. Mm-hmm. So the psychosexual stages there are four with a period of latency in between. There's the oral, the anal, the phallic, the period of latency, and then the genital stage. Now the oral stage says the libido's energy is focused primarily on the mouth. When babies are first born, the first thing they want to do is eat, the rooting mm-hmm. reflex. Mm-hmm. In a child, you touch the child's cheek, the child will turn its head and search for a nipple to begin nursing. And so this is ingrained in us from the very beginning, and Freud recognized that and said that the libido, meaning that ultimate pleasure for a baby, comes through the mouth. Mm-hmm. And so he called that the oral stage. And people can actually become orally fixated. Somebody who the most of the pleasure that they feel is through, for instance, eating, mm-hmm. stimulation of the mouth, can become very extremely obese, and that mm-hmm. might be a problem for a person's life. Now, the anal stage is typically between the ages of 1 and 3, and the child's attention shifts to the process of elimination. So they find certain kinds of pleasure through the anus, and this is the whole idea of potty training, mm-hmm. and the child learning to do what is appropriate. And again, the emphasis on potty training is the id just wants to eliminate. Kid just wants to poop. But mom and dad are trying to teach the kid, this is where it's ingraining in the superego, mm-hmm. trying to teach the kid the proper way. We go into the potty. So mm-hmm. we go poopy in the potty. I remember when my daughter was learning, she was so excited. Whenever she went poopy in the potty, she'd call me and she'd, "Daddy, come look."
Awesome.
At this, I went poopy in the potty, and I'd come and I'd say, "Man, that was way more than I thought could come out of a little girl." But she was excited, and that was really where the focus for her was. And this helps her to learn more about what society asks of her while still able to experience that kind of pleasure. So that's the second stage. The third stage is the phallic stage. And this is between the ages of 3 and 6. There are certain things that happen. The phallic, of course, a phallus is a penis. And so little boys are focused on trying to, they like their penis, they like to run around naked, and they get their hands in their pants. And that's what, when you hear parents say, "Get your hands out of your pants," It's not like an adult sexual urge. It's not the same. Mm-hmm. So there's not necessarily anything socially inappropriate about it. Though we are, again, teaching these children that there are certain appropriate things to do.
Right.
Get your hands out of your pants. Keep your pants on. My son, who's not in this stage yet, but my son, who is 2, he would... Go to bed, and we'd come in to get him in the morning, and his pants would be gone. He'd just be naked in his bed. So there is a little bit of that sort of thing going on there. Adults are who are fixated in this stage might be involved in exhibitionism or whatever. There also is these latent sexual urges that kind of come in there, tend to make the child, a little boy, become... fall in love with mom and become jealous of dad. It's called the Oedipus complex. Or a little girl would fall in love with dad and become jealous of mom, and that's called the Electra complex. And it's where the libido's energy is focused. And through that process, their personality is growing, their superego is learning the expectations of society, but they're still able to follow through with certain libidinal urges. Then, of course, there's this period of latency. It's not so much really a stage, is it's just kind of a quiet time in the psychosexual development, where there's really not any focus of the libido. There's just kind of let's lay off of this for a while and go to school, you know. And then eventually they move into the genital stage, which is adulthood, which where the sexual urges are in their appropriate place in the mm-hmm. genitals. and then sexual intercourse and that sort of thing. This is, according to Freud, the healthy personality is in the genital stage once after puberty hits. And again, through that process, our personality develops. We understand the appropriate place for sex in our culture, the appropriate place for sex in our home, and within our relationships, and that sort of thing. So that is his theory. Now, no one is saying that he was totally accurate, because Freud was very controversial in his day. Mm-hmm. He did set the stage for basically everything else that mm-hmm. we have in modern psychology. So in that, he's very, very important. Mm-hmm. But a lot of his concepts and ideas have not been able to be proven, because how do you prove that an unconscious actually exists? I mean, we believe that it's there, but how do you prove that? Right. It's very difficult to prove. Plus, he did a lot of cocaine, and a lot of people think he was crazy. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of that to consider. But mm-hmm. Freud, though controversial, very important to understanding the development of our personality.
Yeah, and a lot of the things, though controversial, they're observations that he's made, like the oral stage, everything goes in the mouth, and the anal stage is potty training, and all those things. That's the phallic, when they're learning girls and boys and the differences. And so he's seeing things that are going on in the normal
exactly.
life, and just adding a
because these things
end.
Do exist. Potty mm-hmm. training,
yep.
The oral, the oral fixation. Of all these things exist,
absolutely.
And he recognized those, but the reasons why they exist may be different.
Part.
We know a lot more about brain science now. You know a lot more about child development, physical development, mm-hmm. and physiological development, that he just didn't have that information back in his day, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So.
Sure. Well, we need to move forward here. We have the humanistic theories of personality.
Yes.
So can you explain those to us?
Yes. Well, humanism is focused on the human experience and the idea, the concept that humans are different than other animals. Freud kind of based his theory on the id is the animalistic instinct, the innate biological instincts that are given to us due to evolution. Whereas humanism focuses more on what makes humans different than any other animals. That we are not animals in that classic sense, though biologically speaking we have mammalian characteristics, but we have something called free will that most other animals, and there's some controversial research on some apes, but other animals don't have free will. We do. Mm-hmm. And so the focus for humanism is understanding what makes us uniquely human, and the unique traits of what human nature actually is. And there is a focus on the subjective experience, a focus on self-awareness, and the fact that we understand that we are different, and that I'm an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In that, there is Abraham Maslow.
Right.
And Abraham Maslow's theory of the hierarchy of needs is a classic theory talking about, sure, we have biological urges, but then there are some human traits that are unique to humans. And he put that on a hierarchy of these biological traits might be the most important, but once they're met, those needs are met, then there's no need for a human to really worry about them. They focus on something that's a little bit more human, safety and security. Once those are met, then something more human, love and belonging. Animals, it's not really been proven that animals feel love and feel, but they do feel some emotion. But we have this sense of community, humans do, and this sense of wanting to be with other people. And then once those are met, then we move up to self-esteem. Self-esteem is not something that animals have. So humans can have this belief about self and this appreciation for self that other animals don't have. And once all four of those levels are met, then a person can move into what Maslow called self-actualization. And self-actualization is the realization of a person's full potential, that they no longer have these other needs have already been met, so they don't need to focus on them. Instead, they focus on they have these characteristics of personality that are unique and different. For instance, they are comfortable with themselves. They accept who they are and who other people are, and they allow them to be that way. They're able to be spontaneous. They're able to be autonomous, meaning they don't have to rely on other people. They can take care of themselves. They are able to have some fellowship with humanity, meaning they're able to be altruistic, and they're able to help others without needing them to give anything back. They have profound interpersonal relationships that are characteristic of deep loving bonds. Their non-hostile sense of humor. They can be happy and laugh at things without having to be angry at people to do so. You know, the insult comments,
right.
That's not necessary for a self-actualized person. and they can also be comfortable with solitude. They don't have to have people around all the time. They're happy just being themselves and who they are. And so those issues of a self-actualized person, he said that it's very rare, a fully self-actualized person is rare, but we know them when we see them, that
yes.
they just seem to have everything put together well.
Yeah, yeah. There's a sense of peace that you see in them,
yes.
that you don't see in most people.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
So the last person we want to talk about for today is Carl Rogers, and he had a self theory. So could you explain that to us?
Well, Carl Rogers coined the term self-concept and self-image, and he used a lot of these self. And what he said was, is that, and Maslow borrowed some of it too, with self-esteem, for instance, and self-actualization. But this idea of the self, which is a flexible and changing perception of personal identity. And so it really, his theory focused on the fact that we have a self, we're aware of self, and we have a perception. We have a philosophy, we have an understanding of self that is unique to us, that we are the experts on us. So I am the expert on me, that I have an image of who I am that other people may not have, and I understand me better than anybody else can understand me.
Right.
There are some concepts that he talked about, for instance, congruence, and that is, that our actions match our words and match our beliefs. He talked about other things like the ideal self, that we want to find congruence with who we are now, with also who we want to be. And once we are able to meet that, make those two things match, make a full congruence there, then our personality, then we have a lot of the same kinds of aspects of self-actualization that Maslow talked about. And in there, he also talked about how important it was to have something he called unconditional positive regard, mm-hmm. which is to say, he was a therapist, and he came up with an idea of system of therapy, a theory of therapy, which focused on that the person is the expert on themselves, and so it's called person-centered therapy. And in that, he said that people really just need the opportunity to discover who they are, to be more congruent. Mm-hmm. And so he believed an atmosphere of unconditional positive regard where he will not judge the person, he will only think the best of that person at all times. That in that atmosphere, we are truly able to discover who we are. And so that is where we can fully realize our potential as a person and develop the healthiest personality.
Yeah, because if you're not afraid of somebody judging you for a certain thing, then you're more free to open up and really explore your personality and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Tolbert.
Absolutely.
We appreciate your time. And that's all for today. We'll talk to you again next time.